Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Sun et al. Titled, Soluble Epoxide Hydrolase-Dependent Regulation of Myogenic Response and Blood Pressure. This article published online February 21st, 2014. My guests today are Associate Editor Morty Blaustein, Lead Author Anne Huang, and expert David Harder. Let's get started.
Thank you very much, Kara. The report by senior author Anne Huang and her colleagues Dong Sun and others demonstrates metabolic regulation of myogenic tone in a skeletal muscle small resistance artery for the first time. This phenomenon, regulation of myogenic tone by epoxyisotrienoic acids, or EATs, has been well documented in small cerebral and cardiac arteries, but not in skeletal muscle arteries. EATs are arachidonic acid metabolites that usually dilate arteries. The EATs are in turn metabolized to their respective inactive diols by soluble epoxide hydrolase, or SEH, in the endothelium. Nevertheless, removal of the endothelium has no effect on myogenic tone under normal resting conditions. The data in this report show, however, that reduced expression or pharmacological blockade of soluble epoxide hydrolase has a strong effect on myogenic tone. Anne, can you please briefly describe your experimental models and then summarize your major findings? And finally, explain the rationale for using TUCB, which is an uredocyclohexyloxybenzoic acid compound, for your studies.
Hi, sure. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Carrie and David. First of all, I just want to briefly introduce the background of our studies. So EATs have cardioprotective properties. In vascular endothelium, EATs are released in response to physiological stimuli such as shear stress or other vasoactive agents to initiate vasodilation. In our preparations, EAT initiated vasodilation is a hyperpolarization of vascular smooth muscle based. So EATs could also be defined as EDHF. So when the EATs are released, they are rapidly hydrolyzed by SEH. That is the major enzyme responsible for the EAT metabolism. After hydrolysis by SEH, EAT becomes DHEATs. Compared to the EAT, DHEATs have much less vasodilation capacity. Therefore, reduction of EAT hydrolysis or reduction of EAT degradation by inhibiting SEH would increase EAT levels and potentiate EAT bioavailability. So in this study, we use four groups of mice that actually are two pairs of groups. One pair is normal transient pair that include SEH knockout mice and their wild-type controls. The other pair is hypertensive eNOS knockout mice that with and without receiving SEH inhibitors, that is the TUCB. So then the gracilis muscle arterioles of these four groups of mice were isolated and the myogenic response was performed. So the major findings of our study would be, first of all, that the deletion of SEH gene that was observed in SEH knockout mice or pharmacological inhibition of SEH activity that was observed in SEH inhibitor-treated eNOS knockout mice attenuates myogenic constriction of skeletal muscle arterioles. So this response, this attenuated myogenic response, is associated with the reduction in blood pressure in both normal tensive and hypertensive mice. So we think this could be due to the breakdown of EAT metabolism to increase endothelium EAT bioavailability. So as a result, the balance between these two actions, vasodilation and vasoconstriction, was tipped in favor of the dilation, leading to an attenuated arterial tone that is expressed blood pressure. Second, function of endothelial EATs seems to become predominant in most instances only when their degradation is compromised or inhibited. This actually highlights a physiological significance of SEH inhibitors in the EET-dependent adaptation of endothelium function.
And thank you very much. David, you've published several seminal papers on the metabolic regulation of vascular tone. For example, you studied the role of EETs and their metabolism and their mechanism of action in the brain. Can you discuss the significance of the findings reported in the present study and how they fit into a big picture?
I'll try to. The functional significance of the myogenic response in the brain and in the skeletal muscle vasculature is different. In the brain, it's very important for autoregulation of blood flow. And blood flow wasn't measured here, but it was inferred. However, the primary significance of the studies here showing that the myogenic response can be reduced by the SEH knockout mouse and by SEH inhibitors suggests that even under extreme circumstances of myogenic tone, there can be metabolic compensation. So there's a mechanism, endothelial-dependent mechanism, to reduce the level of myogenic-dependent vasoconstriction. I think that's probably one of the most significant findings of this work. It's significant, too, in that it's in the skeletal muscle, which is one of the largest circulations, and its effect on blood pressure will be significant. One thing I should point out, even though EETS has been shown to hyperpolarize a variety of vascular beds, it wasn't measured in this study. So to say that it's working through hyperpolarization is a bit premature. It does make sense, though. It would be consistent with previous literature. But I think the predominant finding and relevance here is that it does serve to offset a high level of myogenic activity. In that respect, you can consider it metabolic compensation.
Well, I certainly think that that's very important. And the other thing, I mean, considering what you just said, if either of you could answer, if you look at inhibition of SEH as a way to increase the response to EETS, do you expect to see any differences, for example, in using SEH inhibitors clinically or in vivo? Would you expect to see differences in vascular beds such as the cerebral or coronary beds that need to be well controlled as opposed to, for example, the muscular bed or the splanchnic beds, which are controlled in different ways?
I think there almost has to be. The extreme example, of course, is the pulmonary circulation, where EETS is going to have the opposite effect. EETS is going to constrict the pulmonary circulation, and it's going to increase pulmonary arterial pressure. In the brain, and this was actually discussed, in beds that autoregulate, it'll probably reduce autoregulatory capacity, which serves as a negative feedback mechanism. In the heart, which is predominantly metabolic, it's hard to predict what effect blocking SEH is going to have in the myocardium, since the myocardial blood flow is very responsive to metabolic activity, so very responsive to metabolic demand. As cardiac metabolic demand increases, this would tend to augment, and it may even be therapeutic in that respect, in situations where there needs to be an increase in flow. One thing we haven't discussed is the kidney. The kidney, like the brain, is highly dependent on the myogenic response for autoregulation in specific areas of the kidney, primarily just before the filtering nephrons. So I think what your point that it's going to have a different effect in different vascular beds is a very important point. And I think this will come out in the clinical trials, that different vascular beds will respond differently. And even more so, the microcirculation. So the microcirculation in different vascular beds will respond differently.
David, thank you very much. I think you bring up some critical points. Anne, would you like to respond? Do you have any thoughts about the differences in regulation in the different vascular beds? For example, the possibility of increasing pulmonary arterial resistance while altering cerebral autoregulation at the same time you're trying to lower blood pressure. How do you see this?
Actually, that's true. In the pulmonary hypertension, ET actually is the stimulus for the increase the pulmonary hypertension. But the one inhibitor SEH, it can further increase the pulmonary hypertension. So indicating this is the opposite effect compared to the skeletal muscle microcirculation.
I think this brings out a really important issue, which is trying to understand the different vascular beds and how they respond. In particular, as an example of a substance that may be vasodilatory in some vascular beds, but not in others, whereas other vasodilatory agents may work more universally. Has there been any suggestion that there are some deleterious effects because of the effects of SEH blockade in the pulmonary circulation?
It does cause pulmonary hypertension. In fact, 20-HEET is a fantastic dilator of the pulmonary vessel. You could say that's true for almost everything in the lung. It's opposite of the other vascular beds. So in the phase 2 clinical trials, the role of SEH inhibition on the pulmonary circulation will be addressed. That doesn't mean that SEH inhibitors can't be used clinically. You simply have to take that into consideration.
I think this discussion brings out the very interesting issues about how it's important to do these very basic studies to elucidate some of the issues that we can be prepared for and come to understand when drugs like SEH inhibitors go into clinical trial. David, you brought out some particularly important points about that. And this is a fascinating study. And so I want to thank both of you very much for the stimulating discussion. Carrick?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.